Now it's time for Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party.
Tracy Martin is back on the Wednesday Wire, and we have a regular time scheduled with her, so our backlog of questions will be sorted out soon, hopefully. Today, though, we talked about the 30-year vision program that's been launched, which asks everyone what they want education to look like for the next 30 years, and we talk about the more than 6,000 children in state care right now. I started by asking what she's been up to.
Well, I've been busy, that is true. I guess we're doing a four-week sitting week at the moment, so that can be quite tiring.
As opposed to
we used to do 2 weeks and then 1 week off, or 3 weeks and 2 weeks off. And when I say off, I mean in recess, so back in your own town or able to sleep in your own bed, that sort of thing. So we're in the middle, we've sort of, this sitting year is in four-week blocks, and four-week blocks can be quite tiring when you sort of don't end up going home and that sort of thing. Like, I won't be home now for 2 weeks because when I'm not in Wellington, I'll be in either Nelson doing something or Blenheim doing something, things like that, you see.
Right. And is that because there's lots of legislation to be passed at the moment, or?
It's normal sort of, it's the same number of weeks. It's just the configuration of the weeks that this particular government has decided to pull together for the parliamentary calendar. And with regard to not going home for the fortnight, I think that's just the difference between being a minister and being standard MP. You know, I'm asked to go and open things, speak to things, do things in my ministerial role that I wouldn't when I was just a backbench MP. Oh, I was just going to say something else big that's happened, and it actually happened yesterday, and it was the repeal or the passing of a piece of legislation to wipe out historic convictions of those who had consensual sex from our gay community. Yeah, and that was actually a really big piece of legislation that went through last night. I was quite surprised and somewhat disappointed that there was nobody in the gallery, really, to see that piece of legislation go through.
Really?
Yeah, I was quite surprised, because I think, you know, there are people's lives that were so terribly affected by what was a law of the time, and I understand the law of the time. But you know, it's right and proper that we passed this piece of legislation last night, and I think it would have been nice for those, particularly those men that have been carrying that conviction, or their families, if there had been a little bit more recognition of it, you know?
So do you just mean it was, you know, more empty than usual?
Yeah, just business as usual, yeah.
That is very sad.
I think so, yeah.
Well, there's been a lot that's happened since we've last spoken.
I know.
And that's cool. I'm glad that we can chat regularly now. But I think a couple of things that came up was the 30-year vision for education. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah. So what we've got is we've got two major launches of the 30-year vision, one in Auckland, one in Christchurch. And the goal of those big launches is that the people who will be in those original meetings, I suppose, will then be able to go back to their communities, whether that be, let's say, the autism community, or whether that be just a town like mine in Warkworth, and run another session. Really, what we're asking people is, what does success look like with regard to education? What does a successful 6-year-old look like, or 16-year-old, or 60-year-old? What we're trying to do is to get, what is the vision for education, you know, over the next 30 years? Get us all on the same page the way that Finland did. Get politics out of the classroom, and then start to work towards what do we need to change or improve or drop or add to get to that vision.
When you say, what does success look like, and is that, in terms, I mean, context-wise, is that anything to do with the fact you've gotten rid of national standards and how you measure success, quotation marks?
Definitely, in a way, how you measure success. Like, the reason why I became really passionate about this is when I was on the Board of Trustees at Warkworth Primary School, we had to do, every 3 years for our charter, we had to consult our parental community and our student body on what are the values of our school, what is important to you. And one of the questions we asked was, what does success look like? And what we got back from our parents was, success looks like a confident child. A success looks like a person who knows they're good at something, who's passionate about something, who looks people in the eye, who can fail but get back up again, That's what success looked like to them. Not a single parent or child said anything to do with being numerate and literate. That was a given. That's what the base of school is. But what is success? Because you can have NCA level 2, that doesn't mean you're going to be successful in life, right? So those are arbitrary markers that we've been working under for a period of time, whether that be national standards or NCA level 2. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for what does success actually look like to us, you know?
You've got the sort of submission questionnaire online, right, where you can actually go and anybody can do this. Have you had a lot of responses?
I think within the first couple of days, they'd had 8,000 people or something like that.
Wow.
I mean, I'm in there. I did mine.
You did yours. I was going to say, what did you say?
I did it anonymously. I said to them, you try and figure out whether you can find me. But considering that at every meeting I've made them use that phrase, what does success look like, I think they'll be able to pick it out, pick my one out of how many ever thousands there are. But yes, again, that's just, we want as many voices in there as possible. So whether it's my little PTA at my local primary school or whether it's just one person going online and doing that survey, we just want as many voices in there as possible so that we've got such, you know, as wide a spread of vision, I suppose.
How do you collect all of that then if there's such, you know, diverse
answers? There's two ways of doing it. First of all, we can run, I think it's called word mapping. So we can run every comment through basically an app and it'll show us, it'll bring up the words that are used consistently or most often are larger than the words that are used least often, right? So that'll give you your major themes. We'll also, some of those questions have a more sort of concise way to answer them. So it's really going through in that sort of big holistic way and looking for major themes, really.
Awesome. I guess the other thing to bring up is the report yesterday that there are now 6,000 or more than 6,000 kids in care, which is a record high, and not enough caregivers.
No. So a couple of things about that. Yes. So there's now 6,100, I think, children in the care of Oranga Tamariki. And half of that increase is because we've had an age increase. So there was a piece of legislation passed last year that says that previously children left the care of Oranga Tamariki on their 17th birthday. Well, now they don't have to leave caregivers until their 18th birthday. And also Oranga Tamariki can support them all the way through to their 21st birthday and stay in touch with them till they're 25. So that's a piece of legislation that was passed last year that we are sort of enhancing and stretching Oranga Tamariki's capacity. So that's half the reason why there's more children. We don't want to have 6,100 children in the care of the state. So we're doing quite a lot of work at the moment, conversations around prevention and early intervention so that we can support families to be able to, you know, keep their children with them. How can we better support families so that they and their children are able to stay together? Because that's the goal at the end of the day.
Retrospectively, if you were raising that age limit, then you would have known that there would have been a larger number of children. Does that not mean that you should have sort of had more caregivers ready?
Well, it's one thing. You can't just magic up caregivers, I'd have to say. So we have had, I think there's been 3,000 new lots of people have applied to be caregivers. We've had 160 more caregivers come on to work with us. But
What's the process of becoming a caregiver?
Well, in the first instance, it's just actually expressing an interest. So it's going and contacting Oranga Tamariki and through the website, I believe, and then just expressing an interest and getting information about it. So that's the start of the process. But at the end of the day, we have to be really honest with the caregivers that some of our children are very challenging, and it's our most challenging children that we have the most difficulty placing. We have also, though, been building homes around New Zealand. And when I say homes, they're houses that might have up to 7 children in them with specially trained parents, so they are couples, with social workers in the house as well. And those are for some really high behavioural need children that need sort of more intensive support. But they're in a home, you know. We try to make it as close as we possibly can to not being an institution sort of facility.
You've talked about before that you can't change things overnight, particularly too because we have, you know, our parliamentary processes, those sorts of things, they take time. What would you do if you could change things immediately?
Are you talking about for Ōranga Tamariki? What I would do is I would, as soon as we see that there is a family under stress, that we would actually have people walk alongside them. If I could magic up them, that those families trust us and that we're not in a situation where we penalise parents, but we actually can come and walk alongside them as soon as they look like they're under stress, then that's what I would do tomorrow if I could click my fingers. But that's going to take some time to build back up people's trust in Ōranga Tamariki, because lots of people had, you know, negative experiences or heard negative things about SIFs, and Ōranga Tamariki has only been there for a year. And also, we judge people when they need help in this country. And instead of judging them, if we actually just reached out and gave them the help they needed, I think we'd go a long way to fixing some of the issues that we're trying to manage.
Mm. There's sort of voices out there and there's talk out there that people want more autonomy, that it shouldn't be an institution that cares for children. What do you think about that?
I think that's what we're, in some ways, that's what I'm talking about. That if we got an earlier, and when I say we, I mean, there was a time, for example, but, you know, and I'm talking about going back in time, I suppose, but there was a time when we didn't actually have Work and Income New Zealand offices at all. Because what we had was, we had Plunkett nurses and Karatani nurses that everybody trusted. They went into the home, and if they saw that a family was under stress, if they saw, say, that a mum wasn't managing, they would reach out and they would get support for that person in the home. And nobody judged that person. It was just, this is what we're going to do. We're going to help you. Now people have to apply and prove they're bad enough to get help. So, you know, we're leaving people out there far too long till they get absolutely desperate, and then on many occasions we move in and we uplift their children.
That was Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party. The Wire. That was